scheduled Board of Health meeting on Tuesday, February 3rd. Looks like we're just missing one. And he may be here in just a little bit, so we'll go ahead and get started without him. First item is the consent agenda. And all items on the consent agenda will be enacted by one motion. No separate discussion of these items unless there is a request made prior to the vote. And it looks like all that's on there is the agenda and the minutes from the last meeting. So I take a motion to approve that.
So moved.
Second.
Got a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Is there anything further? Kluge. Say aye.
Aye.
Only if you want. Dvorak.
Aye.
Speck.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Next is a public forum. And this is the time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health today. Not seeing anybody heading towards the microphone. We'll move to agency reports and departmental reports. First is youth and shelter services, everybody's favorite, Denise Denton.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
You have before you, I think, our quarterly report, which highlights a lot of the things that we've been doing. A lot of it is business as usual. We're working in the schools with Project Alert and Too Good for Drugs and working in the community doing a lot of different presentations. A couple things that maybe are not highlighted on there is our work with the Prevention Policy Board, and one of the things that we're going to be doing there is we're taking a pretty serious look at medical marijuana. That's going to be probably coming up with the legislature, and we've just given you a handout on some of the facts. There's a lot and lots of misinformation about the use of marijuana in a sort of medical form. And so to that end, we'll be at the State House on February 25th with the Day on the Hill, which is something that we do annually anyway. But in the last few years, we've been working on a social host ordinance, which became a statewide law in the last year. So we're taking a breath from that, and Day on the Hill is really going to focus on marijuana this year. So we're trying to make sure that the legislators have a more accurate version of the finer qualities of marijuana. And we've given you a fact sheet that we are going to be providing to them, giving you some of the more recent research concerning that. Another thing that we're doing, and another thing that's probably not highlighted in that report, but we are working more with the university population, and to that end, we'll be working with the Health Promotion Club and the Theta Chi fraternity, bringing in Linda Kalin on March 30th. Linda is the director of the Poison Control Center. She's an adjunct at all the medical schools and the pharmacy schools. She's very much in demand to speak about emerging drugs, and so she has agreed to come to Iowa State on the 30th. We have the Great Hall, and I need everybody there because it seats 1,000 people. So mark it on your calendar right now.
Okay, give me the date again.
March 30th. So I've given you a save the date form, I think, there. Linda, there's nothing. Linda's forgotten more about drugs than I will ever know. Let's just put it that way. She is such an expert, and she talks even faster than I do. So.
And I'm going to say that's a lot.
Thank you.
And I mean that in a professional manner.
Yeah, in the kindest way. I know.
There you go.
So she really is an excellent speaker, and because she is the director of the Poison Control Center, anything that is coming through, any kind of emerging drug, they've got their finger on that pulse, because anytime somebody gets poisoned by the new and greatest and brightest thing that somebody's just invented, they're usually the first people that get to know about that. And then the other thing that, of course, we're still involved in is the e-cigarette and vaping issue that we brought to you in December. We are now working with the government of the student body. They have proposed that as of last Wednesday to be a campus-wide ban, and they are going to be debating that tomorrow night in the Campanile Room at 7 o'clock. So that was proposed by a senator, and she feels very strongly, or at least very positively, that that will not have a lot of trouble going through. And from that, we hope that if it passes with GSB, that we will the Prevention Policy Board will be able to partner with them to take that to the city council, and we will go that route. But in the meantime, just an update, Madison, Wisconsin, Duluth, Minnesota, Minneapolis, Rochester, Olmsted County, and the city of Rochester have all just passed ordinances that disallow it in public places for that reason. And I've given you a couple of handouts that speak to several organizations that the National, I'm not saying it right, Thoracic, Surgeons College, all of those folks are thinking that there's just a whole lot more to it than we were giving it credit. And I think just in the last week or so, an article has come out, or research has brought to light the fact that the formaldehyde in an e-cigarette is 1.5 times more than what it is in a regular cigarette. And also there have been a couple stories in the news about how people have been packing them in their luggage on airplanes, and they've been spontaneously combusting in the cargo hold. So there have been a couple sort of near-death experiences on runways where they've had to land a burning plane because the e-cigarettes have blown up in the cargo hold. So now the FAA is recommending that they hold them in their laps because they can put the fires out much easier in the cabin than they can in the cargo hold. So that, knowing I'm flying here soon, that's very comforting. What questions do you have?
I think I'm good. I know I've had a couple of conversations, additional conversations with members of the Ames City Council, and I think there is some interest, growing interest maybe, more than there was probably a year ago or less, the first time I had a conversation with them, but
along those lines, I know that one of the concerns, and I spoke with Jessica Reynolds, one of her concerns was, could we put forth an ordinance that could be defended in court? And I have personally spoken with the people in Minneapolis, Duluth, Rochester, Boston, L.A., Chicago. No one has been approached. No one has had any problem with anybody bringing suit against that. So I find that encouraging. If they're not going to sue New York, I don't know that they would sue the city of that the tobacco companies would come after Ames. I could be wrong about that, but they've not had any trouble with it.
Well, don't give up.
Finding trouble or getting the ordinance passed?
Either one.
Okay, thank you.
Paul, do you remember what you, at our last meeting, you had some concerns about us. We were talking about passing that as a board, but you had, what was it that you had concern that we should wait for Ames to do something?
Well, it's going to affect Ames more than it's going to affect anybody else. The city of Ames is going to be responsible to enforce it. It's not going to fall on Margaret's division or Homeward or Mary Greeley to enforce the ordinance. It'll fall on the city of Ames, and that's part of their concern, was that if it's an ordinance that the city is going to be responsible to enforce, they would just assume that the city pass it as opposed to the county. So. But there is growing interest on the city's part. So
everything I have forwarded on to Steve Shanker.
I'm just going to guess that we'll see an ordinance in some form here in the not too distant future.
Can I pose a question? If we saw that at the city level, would you be amenable to us coming back and proposing that for a county ordinance?
Oh yeah, we can always have the discussion, and ultimately, whatever this board recommends, it'll be up to the Board of Supervisors if they want to approve the ordinance, pass the ordinance.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Okay.
Do we need to send anything to Ames saying that we endorse it?
We'll get them a letter sooner or later. Kristen reminded me the other day. So yeah,
I thought we were going to do that. Yeah. We said it at the last meeting.
Yeah.
I didn't know if that had happened or not.
Not yet. So.
Yeah.
A little short on support staff sometimes.
Oh, separately from Denise.
Wait a minute.
Oh. The speaker's head of Iowa Poison Control,
yes.
Said, or maybe Dr. Passion can answer. I recently had a call and referred somebody to the Poison Control Center, which I thought was a free phone call, and they said they would not answer the question without, I think, a $30 fee.
No.
I've never heard of that.
You had the wrong number.
Yeah, I think they had it the wrong number, too. I use it, and they have no idea where I'm calling from. I've never heard that.
You know what? It is the same number throughout the United States. It's 1-222-222, something like that. But it only, if you call within Iowa, it goes to Sioux City, and there is no charge.
Never heard of that.
Yeah,
I have Linda on speed dial. You want to call her now?
No.
We can find this out.
I believe you, but I...
I have her home phone. We can track her down.
Call the Poison Control Center.
Maybe it was the poison hotline. How to order.
They were rather upset. They called me back.
Well, separately from Denise's report, my name is Laura Bell, and I work with Youth and Shelter Services also as a Specialized Prevention Services Coordinator, so I do tobacco control in the county. And the reason why I'm here today is talking with you about what we're kind of working on within the county. Part of what we're doing is working with businesses, reaching out to businesses to talk with them about education, about tobacco-free and nicotine-free policy, wellness policies for their work sites and their employees. So if they are in need of assistance, helping them have education about what they can do, and then, you know, looking at potential policies that they can put in place and just kind of how they can work better with their employees to become tobacco-free and nicotine-free if they're interested. Also, we're working on reaching out to dental clinics. So working with particular, you know, healthcare providers that, you know, provide oral health care to address Quitline, Iowa services with their clients or their patients. So if a patient comes in, talking with them about Quitline, Iowa, talking with them about their tobacco use, and then ultimately referring them on to Quitline, Iowa if they're interested in doing so. Quitline, Iowa can offer an 8-week supply of free nicotine replacement therapies to Iowans who are 18 and older who call, and then they have to complete all 5 calls. But Iowans who are 13 and older can call and just get the cessation counseling or the coaching. But they also have web coaching available, too, which is a huge benefit. So it's very accessible. I handed out, well, I asked for this to be handed out to you guys anyway, the flyer from IDPH talking about their current month promotion of Quitline, Iowa. So this is just kind of to bring attention to the services. And then also is there's 2 different charts that are flow charts. One is how the Quitline, Iowa process for referral works for the provider. So it's a very simple laid out, you know, as a provider, what your responsibilities are and how people work to contact you to make sure that your patients are being served. But then the other one is for the patient, so that the patient understands what that process is. We've heard a lot of concerns from patients not getting phone calls or feeling like their medications are supposed to be coming, but they're not. And so just really kind of demystifying the whole process as much as we can.
These are both the same.
One should say providers and one should say for you.
Nope.
Well, then.
It looks exactly the same to me.
They're both letters. So.
Yeah, they look exactly the same.
Well, then I will get you new ones.
Mine are different.
For providers. Okay.
Got it. Oh, I see. Oh,
very good.
Here's providers. Ah.
Now, just if I can. You said 13 and above.
Uh-huh. 13 and above. They can get the coaching.
And 14 above or 18 above?
18 and above can get the nicotine replacement therapy.
Do you need any parental permission for that? Because they're underage?
For the coaching, for them, I do not believe so. For the 13 and through 17, I don't believe so. But I can definitely check in with IDPH. And
you may want to, because
yes.
You need about consent for just about everything else. You know, and it doesn't put, except for some sexually transmitted disease.
Right.
You don't, but I don't think quitting tobacco is part of it or drug.
And I'm not sure if it falls under that substance abuse guideline, which...
I don't think that that does the same as...
Okay.
I still think you need consent.
I will check and get back to you.
Yeah.
Absolutely. For Medicaid patients, they have to participate in Quitline, Iowa services to get the medication benefit. So they have to go through the fax referral process and all of that. So that's hugely important information for them to have and know that they have to complete all the calls and what that process is like. Also, Through with Chew Week is coming up February. Yes, please.
So if you have Title 19.
Yes.
And you have to do Quitline.
Yes.
How do you know that they need to do Quitline unless they refer themselves to it?
They have to be fax referred by their doctor.
Got it. So if the provider says that you need Quitline,
right,
and you don't do it, you lose your benefits.
So if the provider says, if you, you know, let's say I'm a patient, I'm coming in to speak with my doctor, and I have to have Quelan Iowa services if I want to do the medication benefits through Medicaid. If I want to receive that free benefit and have Medicaid approve it and do that, then...
The benefit for Quitline, but not their full benefits.
Right.
Okay.
To receive that medication benefit,
I see. Yep.
They have to be referred.
Got it.
Okay. No, they can certainly pay out of pocket if they would choose to do so also, but it's a huge benefit that if they can take advantage of it, then it's great. But through the 2 week is February 15th through the 21st, and the Great American Spit Out is on the 19th of that week. So just to bring awareness of the event and just that spit tobacco is a concern, spitless tobacco is a concern still in the county, even though we hear a lot about these other products. It is still a tobacco product and does cause harm. So I just wanted to come out and talk with you guys about that. But if there's any questions, you know, I'm happy to answer them. I will get back to you about the consent as well.
I think the smokeless tobacco is huge. I mean, my son goes to school here in Nevada, and he said everybody's got a can of chew in their pocket.
Mm-hmm. It's so. Typically more rural areas. You see more spit tobacco use. More urban areas, you see more of the cigarettes and the e-cigarettes and those kinds of things. I'm hearing more anecdotally people in the rural areas are starting to use more of the e-cigarettes also, though. But spitless tobacco is a huge concern.
Absolutely. And like his father, he got sick the first time he decided to try it. Probably won't have to worry about that again.
Well, I'm very glad for him that he got sick.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, there you go. That's exactly right. I'm
thank you.
Swallow it the first
yeah.
time.
That's what I told him.
Yeah.
Totally right.
Thank
make
you.
Sure you
swallow
it. Next, we have Eileen Mullen from Mary Greeley Medical Center, formerly from Homeward.
And we're actually going to change that to say Story County Public Health. Our sign that's going to go out and is on the door right now says Mary Greeley Home Health and Story County Public Health, because I've had so much feedback that people don't even know we have a public health because it's been buried into that. So that'll be good. Yes, this is Eileen Mullen. I think I'll start with the budget report. Fiscal year began July 1st, and on the front page we had 260 Story County residents were provided skilled nursing from July 1 through December 31st, and 22% of those clients received a full or partial discount for one or more of the skilled nursing visits, so that's where our healthy aging grant dollars was going for that. Our homemaker services, we've provided 149 to 149 residents during that same time frame. 9% of those were paid for by a waiver program, and 70% were paid according to our sliding fee scale. So, again, our grant dollars were helping with that. The local Board of Health grant dollars, we've had 21 communicable diseases that we've done some surveillance on and investigation, and 255 hours of service for the disease investigation and surveillance was utilized. You don't have this report, but I wanted to... Oh, yeah, you do at the very bottom. We've added a piece. The public health services provided at reduced or no fee. I wanted to... let you know that the amount for which there was no funding to cover, so the shortfall fell back onto Mary Greeley was on $85,000. And I thought that would be something that we should start reporting out so you just get an idea of how much work we are doing in the county where our grant dollars aren't always covering that. Then on the last page, the CBS helps is our new coalition of Boone and Story County Healthcare Emergency Planner Coalition. And so PHEP is the Public Health Emergency Planning, and HPP designates the money given to the hospitals. And once again, our home health, public health, Story County Public Health is the fiscal agent. So we manage the dollars that come in and the checks and that stuff. You can see that at the top line there, Story County Public Health receives the greatest amount of dollars, and I have heard in this new funding year, the way they've recalculated, that we're going to get quite a bit more than a lot of other counties, because it's finally being recognized we have a lot of needs in this county between the ISU students and our geriatric population that's growing. So Boone County Public Health, their dollar amount would be next, and then you see Mary Greeley, Story County Hospital, and Boone County fall down a bit. So the counties are the ones that have the money, and what we're trying to do, again, is work with our partners here in the county to figure out where the money should be best spent in preparation for emergency planning, since we as a public health don't have widgets and things per se. So at this point, about third line down, the remaining balance and end of December, you see there's a lot of dollars left, but we will get those spent by working with our community partners. And the community partners that we know there are some needs with are with the sheriff and the police and school systems. Any report on the, or any questions on the budget part? Next, in April, at our next Board of Health meeting, I'll be asking for an approval for our local public health service grant dollars. We need to submit a story of how the Board of Health has made a difference in this county. And so I put some feelers out, and Margaret has given me a nice story that I will probably bring to you guys in April to see if you approve. If I have others that come in by then I'll let you make the choice of what story you want me to submit. But just for you to know, the Hickory Grove Lake Watershed Project with where it replaced 9 septic systems, I believe, that will be the one that I will probably present if I get no others that you choose to go over. Then I've given you a handout on the child burial grant assistance, and that I think is just good to know that Page County has this assistance, and so if anyone in the state can utilize that. So, Dr. Passion, you might.
In the state, can you utilize
yes.
this?
Yeah. So please feel free to put that in your lobbies. We hate the idea that we need to use these, but we do. So. And if you have questions on that, give me a call or call those numbers, and they can answer that for you.
So this is not just Page County?
Correct. And let's see. Somewhere on there it makes a point of saying that, too. Qualifications, you must be a resident of the state. And we were given this at our last public health state meeting, and they asked us to make sure and hand this out to everyone, because you don't have to be. Otherwise, I would have read it that way, too. And let's see, Terry, as far as what she's been doing with the public health, they've had some confirmed neurovirus at ISU, one of the fraternities or one of those places. Then we also have a new active TB case that we just got that one. Our immunization audits are complete. There's still flu vaccine available, and of course no Ebola contacts or travelers at this point in time. And then last is just my personal, I've sent my retirement in, so I just wanted to let you guys know I'm going to retire from this job. I don't know what I'll do after that, but that won't be till July 1st, so they'll be getting
a replacement.
What? What'd you say?
Weren't you just here? I mean, didn't you just come?
It seems like it. It's only been 13 years, but, you know, what the heck.
How long?
13.
It's been 13 years.
12, somewhere in there. Yeah.
I don't know if that's
now
good
that
or bad.
I finally got
I don't
it,
know whether that's good or bad.
I don't know either. Now that I got it figured out, I'm leaving.
That means you've only got 2 more Board of Health meetings.
That's right. And hopefully my last one, I'll have a replacement, but we'll see.
Well, that'd be nice. And it is a public meeting, so you can come back anytime.
Thank you.
As long as you're on the microphone, can I ask you a question? Do you guys give yellow fever vaccines?
I do not believe we do, but if you'd like me to check into that and how we could maybe look into doing
it. Yeah, could you please? It's just we're getting the travel clinic is kind of expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the big thing that we can't do at the clinic, and the one thing the travel clinic does is give yellow fever vaccinations, and you got to go through special online training, I understand. And
okay.
The travel clinic at McFarland does it now, but it can be pricey, and
okay.
So a lot
I'll
of
check into
don't
that.
Have insurance. So I just wondered if there's an option that we could give them.
Okay, well, now that we can do some billing, too, even if it was
less,
you wouldn't have...
Well, you'd have to check on it.
Okay, I'll do that.
So if you could. And then if you could let me or my nurse manager know, that'd be great.
What countries require yellow fever?
Thank you. Next is...
So are we going to put anything out on measles?
Maybe we... Yeah, I mean, you can come back up for just a minute.
Have you seen measles?
Good plan. Dr. Kluge was asking about if there's any public information going out on
measles. Vaccination, boosters, age groups.
Nothing more than what you've heard on. There have been some talking points that I did not print off, and maybe you've read those. But
yeah, I just finished a video on measles that they're going to put on the Mary at the McFarland Clinic website that once, we make a few corrections to it. But no, nothing that has been put out specifically. I don't know. I'm always torn between that. What can be put out that we're not saying every day in our office?
Mm-hmm.
Get your kids vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not sure at this time whether it would be reasonable for the, I don't think it'd do any good. I mean, the Story County Board of Health could say that, we support routine measles vaccinations for all children that are medically indicated to get it. I don't know if that would do any difference or anything about it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't
People
know.
Have questions a lot about travel and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
we sure have a good rate in our county, which is of vaccines, which is really awesome. Don't you find it fascinating that a lot of states around us have had measles reported and we haven't yet? Knock on wood.
Well, knock on wood. The problem is, whenever you get a certain percentage, the herd immunity concept,
mm-hmm.
when you get a certain percentage you don't vaccinate, that's when it can get out, and that's why these groups are getting them. It's like the people who are getting the measles are those that haven't been vaccinated yet,
mm-hmm.
or could not be vaccinated.
I do know that if we get a case in Iowa, then we will hear from Iowa Department of Public Health what they want us to do with that. But at this point, they're not giving anything any different.
Well, we do have spring break coming up when we're going to disperse
true.
The population when we'll be coming back.
True.
Thanks, Arlene. And Margaret.
Here. Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks. I'll just go over some numbers real quick. This will be a brief report. Nothing has really changed a lot recently just because this is our slow season and we're just doing a lot of catching up right now. Let's see, our impressive septic permits for 2014 is 90. So 90 new systems went in and 7 repairs. So about 100 systems we worked on this year. That's a lot of work. Well numbers, they're down for 2014 compared to 13. We've had 32 total, which includes 5 water wells, mostly for livestock. Right now we have spent about $10,000 of our grant money. We've got about $26,000 still available. We've spent some more of that down recently, but that's not in this report. And there is a proposal to include arsenic under the grant water testing coverage. Enforcement, we have outstanding NOVs. Most of them, they really can't do much during the winter months. 6 septic systems, 1 well, 2 Crestview, and I'll go into that a little bit more later, and 1 lead. 27 complaints in 2014, most of them about open discharge of untreated sewage, several abandoned houses, animal waste, dumping of trash, living conditions, mold and plumbing, water pollution, bed bugs, smoking, lagoon odor, illegal occupation, lawn grass, and pesticide exposure. And then somebody's not cutting their grass, and then it's kind of a rodent harborage deal, and and then not included in that list are our tenant complaints, and we get, you know, a boatload of them. And so we just kind of work through them. Kathy is kind of our expert in talking to those folks and providing them information if they need legal counsel, et cetera. So let's see. Time of transfers, 5 binding agreements. I think most of those are they're going to demolish the building and replace it. 67 time of transfer, septic inspections in 2014. And then we plan to set up better tracking with the recorder so that some of these that change hands but don't get an inspection, we will catch them better. Stacy Harridge is the new recorder as of the first of this year, so we're giving her some time to get acquainted with her new office there. For septic disclosure, let's see. We all passed that May 1st of last year, so it's almost, we're coming up on a year here. And we don't have a lot of numbers. A lot of them, it's just kind of a gray area where we don't really know if it really counts as this or not. But we've had just a couple who just went storming out, really mad about it. And we've had about 5 systems that had to be upgraded because of the disclosure. With this, too, we need to refine the tracking. And then the idea that I had just last week at our interagency review meeting was to add the plat survey recordings to the disclosure requirement. And that would require adding language to the existing disclosure information. And what that is oftentimes is they will, like a farm will split into 2 lots, for example, and oftentimes that farm does not have a septic system. So that's another way that's just broadening our net to sort of catch those folks that are not treating their sewage. For our lead inspection program, I currently have 8 open cases with 2 still having kids residing there. The HHLPSS tracking is up and running, working pretty good. I need to talk to... what do you call now? Public Health, Stewart County Public Health, Homeward, to see if this new software is working for them, because they had the majority of the computer work. And if it's not working, it's working for me, fine, but if it's not working for them, we do need to consider dropping this program, because that is something that we told IDPH is that, you know, we'll give it a try. If it's still just too cumbersome for us, we might consider backing out of the program. For me, it's working pretty good. Iowa Grants, we retired SharePoint, yoo-hoo. And then we have 2 representatives today from Marshalltown to talk about the HUD Lead Hazard Control Grant Program. The picture on the right is just shows one of the techniques that they use if they're going to re-site a building that has leaded paint. They have to write in big letters across there that it's leaded paint so that 50 years from now when they get the big idea to tear that siding off, they will see that, yeah, they've come upon that leaded paint. So that helps.
Interesting. Where are the 8 open cases?
Where?
What? Where are they? Are they, here in Ames, Nevada?
Let's see. There's like 4 in Nevada, 1 in Cambridge, 1 on a farm, and the remainder in Ames. Yeah, but I'd say Nevada has more than Ames.
How are they allowed to have children there still? If they're, mm-hmm. Are they rentals or are they?
Yes, they're rentals. Well, one is not. One one keeps renovating, and we can't get those levels down. And no matter how much you talk to that individual, they're not interested in stopping their projects or home improvements.
There's nothing you can do
to get the child out of the house. I guess I could report it to the state. I don't know.
I was just wondering what we should do, I guess.
Okay, well, yeah, that is a good question, Mark.
How high is the level?
Those are not low. The one that had the highest level was in Ames, and, man, they got on that so fast. I was so impressed. But these are down like right around 12s or so, 15s now. Not huge. I'm not losing sleep over it, but it is an issue. Yeah. So Eileen talked about the Hickory Grove Lake Watershed Project. It's really funny to refer to it as a story. It doesn't feel like a story, but I know what you're talking about. So I did the 9 soil test reviews, 3 septics were replaced, annual report completed, and $10,000 was received from the Story Soil and Water Conservation District. And then conservation asked the health department to look at how many septic problems that we have in East Indian Creek, and that is the watershed just left or west of the Hickory Grove area there. And it's an overwhelming 30% do not have septic systems. Yeah, it's crazy. And that is a more rural area with farmhouses, and so that number really isn't real surprising. But 30% are just going right to the field tiles, ditches, creeks. Crestview, let's see. We are trying to set up a meeting with the manager, owner of Crestview for this week. We're getting close. I issued 4 notices of violation that we already talked about. There's still 2 outstanding. Most of the problem right now are the vacant trailers, and we have to work with the treasurer's office to make sure that they have the proper titles before we start moving them around so we don't lose track of them. So that's the biggest problem right now. It is looking way better. Miscellany. Cameron Estates erosion control. They got the grass in super late, so they might not have good coverage this spring, and we'll have to address that when that happens. Squaw Creek subdivision burn pile. Kathy's been working on that complaint. The association brings all their brush there, and they burn it. And so they can't burn it. They can't burn it, so they have to stop doing that, and they're all kind of up in arms right now. This is more of a DNR issue, but we act as their legs and eyes oftentimes.
There's no burning at all at any time or any...
The problem was that the landscape didn't originate on that lot, and you can burn landscape, like if it comes from your yard, you can burn it right there, but you can't move it somewhere else and burn it.
Really?
For the residents of Squaw.
Right, I know.
Yeah, they could haul it to a communal burn pile. And
so what difference does it make? You're still burning, whether you burn it your own on your own land, that's okay?
I think what they're getting at is landscape workers bringing mountains of yard waste in and burning it and affecting, you know, a microclimate compared to little guy here, little guy here. It's more doable that way.
But it's okay to burn on your own property. Your own dead trees.
Well, not in Ames, for example.
Oh,
you
like
can't,
out in the
but
county. I'm talking about out in the county.
Unless the fire marshal, the state fire marshal, puts a ban on it. Yeah, like when we had that drought.
So as long as it's not a fire ban, you can burn your own on your own property then.
Yes.
You still get it. You can burn it. So.
Okay. Nimbella Homes is looking into irrigation wells. They'll have to get withdrawal permits for that, and that is just for irrigating their yards. Dakin's Lake, I was up there again last week trying to get some more soil information. They're still on the fence on whether or not they're going to replace that system. I do believe that it bypasses. I'm pretty sure they're going right down that ravine with their pipe. Without treatment, I think it bypasses Dakin's Lake. So that's one good thing. Let's see. Okay, yeah. Certification of septic contractors goes in effect April 1st of this year. And we have a Coyotes class scheduled for March 4th and 5th. And Mark is signed up for that. And that's now going to be at McFarland because our numbers grew from like 15 to 30 people wanting to take that test and sit for that exam. I got a request from IOWA to train the Hardin County sanitarian. I just thought I'd run that past you guys. When with Boone County, for example, Dave would come over and just shadow me when I had different jobs that I want that I thought would be a good example for him to learn from. He would swing by, and we would do that. Hardin County, we might have to just do like 2 or 3 day shadowing because it's a lot further. Dave did my soil core, and he was like really strong. So that was a really good deal. I don't know if this gal's going to want to do that for me. So I got to get something out of this. Coffee, and you know, at least coffee. So you think that's okay, Polly, right? I mean, okay. Doesn't take a whole lot of time. Okay. Pool tattoo tanning. IDPH is currently reviewing 2 new pool plans for Ames. Kristen caught somebody, an unregistered, non-certified bed operator in Nevada on Facebook.
What does that mean? Like a bed and breakfast?
Tanning bed. Yeah.
Oh, that kind of bed. Like a tanning bed. Oh.
And lo and behold, we had somebody from Nevada come in and take that exam. So, twice, actually. So all is good right now. Everything's squared away, we believe.
One pool inspected, one pool shut down.
Yes. And that you can talk to Matt about that, yeah. And then IDPH is hauling us in for pool tattoo tanning training in April, all 3 of us. Thank you. This is my dog, Sophie, really cute. I love her. And then for Marshalltown, this is the service area map. I just thought I would throw it up there so you, if you needed to refer to that.
I have a question, Margaret
before you slipped out.
Margaret, where the trailer court?
Burn mark.
No, the trailer court north, the north of the Animal Disease Lab, that one up there on the one north up there.
North
Hickory Grove.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Where do you know what he's done to remedy his problem there, or what he's? Can you give us an update on what he's done there at that other trailer court north of?
Yeah. Okay. There's someone really, really interested in purchasing that, and he's doing some really excellent homework in hiring engineers to check out that system. The plan is to take off the UV light and put chlorinators on it. That's the plan. I don't know if that's in place yet. That's a DNR enforcement issue, not mine.
Okay, so the UV lights are there now.
Then. Yeah, and they're not working.
Right.
So they're switching over to the chlorine.
The chlorine, okay.
Yeah, but and that's a goal. They're going to do that. I just don't know when they're going to do that.
Thanks, Margaret.
You're welcome.
Okay, that goes to additional items. Presentation of the HUD Lead Hazard Control Grant updates. Our friends from Marshalltown.
Yeah, thank you. I'll just introduce myself. My name is Michelle Sponheimer, and I'm the Housing and Community Development Director with the City of Marshalltown. Joyce Brown with me is our Lead Program Manager for our grant. We currently have 2 grants operating right now, so you'll have to excuse when I talk a little bit. We role play back and forth in our positions, but we're real excited to be here. Thank you, Mark, and Christopher, for invitation to come and talk to you about this program, because I think it's really exciting and going to be great for some of your residents here that are going to be participating. Just a little bit of history, a little bit of background, and you should have a memo that was included in your packet. But the City of Marshalltown was first awarded a lead hazard control grant in 2003, and so we've been operating since that time. We're currently finishing out our 4th award and just starting on our 5th. And Joyce is going to hand out, just so you also have to look while I'm talking, is our brochure and application, as well as just a couple before and after pictures of some projects that we've done, because everybody loves pictures. So we're, as I said, just getting started on our 5th award. Our 5th award is a $3.4 million award from HUD. We were the only award in the state this grant cycle, and so that's real exciting for us. We do know that there were some other communities that were in the competition this year. We're always sad to see our friends around the state not be successful, because it's just good for Iowa, but we're fortunate that we were a success. The basic foundation of this program is to make homes lead safe in our communities and to prevent lead poisoning among children. And so over our time, since 2003, with our numbers for the fifth grant once we're done, in our jurisdiction that we participate in, we'll have made 722 homes lead safe. And so if you think about over, by the time we're done in 2017, over about a 14-year period, we're doing about 50 homes a year. And so that's apartments, it's owner-occupied, it's contract sale properties that we're working in. And we spend, under our current grant coming up, we're going to be spending about $14,500 a unit. And so what we do is we take applications from whether it be homeowners that are income qualified, rental property owners that have tenants that income qualify. There needs to be a child in the home under the age of six or a visiting child. So maybe grandma and grandpa have grandkids after school, home daycares. Nieces, nephews that come over every day, something of that nature. If they've got little ones that are spending time in that home, then they can qualify. We do have to do the income eligibility verifications. And then we do a full inspection. And, you know, Margaret and her staff, they're familiar with that kind of inspection process to some scale. We do a very in-depth inspection. We have two full-time inspectors on our staff. One is primarily our lead inspector. Our other one does healthy home assessment. And they go out and they do a surface-by-surface using an XRF machine of everything. So you look at a room like this, we would do the wall, the baseboard, the door trim, the window trim, the sash, the side. I mean, you name it. If it's painted, it's tested. And we have to identify what every component is that has lead-based paint in it in that house, exterior and interior. And so we generate a very comprehensive report of the issues that the home has with regards to the lead paint or healthy homes like mold, moisture, electrical hazards, things of that nature. We then write up specifications based on that report and let those out to bid. We have now 16 certified lead abatement contractors that we are working with. So we're real excited about that. That's increased dramatically this past year, as I think being the only award has helped because some of those contractors are coming from other areas. That helps us from a more competitive standpoint because, of course, we want our lowest responsible bidder to get those awards. But it gives us a chance to make sure that we have enough work and we're getting done on a very timely schedule. So we have those contractors bid on the projects. They're awarded. During the construction that takes place, typically in most cases, I'd say probably 95% of cases, we actually relocate the family during construction. Our projects take about 7 to 10 days on average. They're supposed to be done within 10. Sometimes we see big projects might go a little longer, but the project goes very quickly, and so the family is moved out during that time. In Marshalltown, families relocate to one of two houses that our library owns that we partner with, and we call them our safe houses. And so we move them in. It's fully furnished. They're there for a week. They move out. You know, no expense to them. If we don't have that availability in some of our other rural areas, we work with hotels. And sometimes we'll see families say, well, I can go stay with, you know, my relative or something of that nature. If they do have to be put in a hotel, you know, we help cover expenses like meals or things like that for them. We try to really reduce that burden on the family. We do have them move out a lot of their belongings and stuff, though, during that construction because the cleaner the apartment can get, the better for our contractors to get in and out and not cause potential for a new hazard as that construction. As you're talking about the remodeling, that's a big issue and people don't always think about that dust that's created. And so we work through those projects very quickly. We have to have a clearance test on the home before the family can move back in. So we need to make sure that the contractor has done their work appropriate and cleaned appropriately so that it's safe for the family to return. Throughout the project, we're there on site almost daily to check on their progress, that they're on-site working, that they're using safe work practices as they're supposed to with the state under their certifications. So we keep a very detailed record of what's going on with that project at all times. Being a federal grant program, there are a lot of responsibilities on our part and accountability, and the grant is ever-changing and growing, which causes challenges but pushes us to be even better. And so we work through that process. When the project is clear and final, the family is able to move back in, project complete. for our homeowners, there's generally no expense to them unless it goes over a maximum amount, which is anywhere between $20,000 and $23,000 for us, depending on the size of the home and the scope of work. So generally, your homeowner is not going to have a contribution. The requirement of them is that they maintain that home as their primary residence for a period of 3 years. So we place a lien against the property for that time. And if they decide to move or relocate for any reason, they would pay back a portion upon sale of their house. So it really ends up being a pretty good deal for those homeowners to maybe walk away with $20,000 of improvement on their home, making it lead safe, and not having to make that investment as a low-income homeowner. On rental property owners, it's slightly different. We do have a matching contribution because we want them to have some stake in the game. You know, they are the rental property owner. It is a business, and they are getting a substantial benefit. And so we do ask for a 10% match, really quite minimal when you think about it. And we are willing to put in that per unit cost. So you end up with a triplex, fourplex in your community, you could be looking at close to $80,000 of investment potentially. So $8,000 to come up with that for a match, pretty good deal. You know, most people say that's a pretty good return on investment. Again, the property owner has to maintain that as affordable housing for a three-year period, try to market affirmatively to families with children, and so we help to make sure that they're signing plans to do that. And we do follow-up surveys annually to make sure that they're understanding those agreements. We don't want to put $80,000 into a unit, then they hike the rent up, and it's no longer affordable. And so that's our biggest concern. We've recently kind of reopened the contract sale market. In Marshalltown, we see a lot of contract sales. I don't know if you see that as much here in Story County, but we do have a large population in Marshall County that does contract sale where you have buyer A is selling to buyer B on contract, maybe because they couldn't get traditional financing. And so it's also a way that some people skirt the rental inspection world that we see, but it is a reality out there. So we've opened that up to, it does require both the contract seller and the contract buyer to sign agreements, understanding what the expectations are. But they're treated more like a homeowner in that aspect. So I know I've gone through a lot of information, and I'm a fast talker, so I appreciate that. But, you know, so we do have a really great program. We've had great successes. We're real excited to now be in Story County. You know, we're excited that the Board of Supervisors agreed that the unincorporated areas are eligible for assistance. And then within Story County, the incorporated communities that chose to participate include Cambridge, McCallsburg, and Roland. And so those are our three incorporated areas that chose to participate. We did contact all the communities. We sent notification. We followed up with a lot of emails and phone calls to try to get participation. A lot of times communities are hesitant. You know, they're not sure what it's about. And so they don't sign on. Unfortunately, this is kind of a one-time sign-on. Throughout the three-year period, we cannot add additional communities because of the environmental review process that is required by the federal government is quite comprehensive and expensive. And so we do that once at the beginning, and those are the communities that are going to be participating. So we're happy to be serving the area that we can serve here. We have a lot of other areas in throughout Tama, Hardin, and Marshall County that are participating with us. The bulk of our work ends up in Marshalltown, but applications are on a first-come, first-served basis primarily. We do give priority when there's a lead poison child in the home. That goes first and foremost to the top of the list. And so we've already been working with the staff to try to connect with those open cases that you have and say, how can we get these families, if they're eligible, involved right away? And so with that, I gave you some of the before and after, so just give you a couple pictures. We have lots of brochures and applications for those of you here. Please take them. You know, we ask for your communication with the people that you know in this community to help pass the word, because that's definitely how we get our outreach done in most ways, is just, you know, you're meeting with a family for whatever reason and you say, hey, you might qualify for this. Give them a call. And so,
does Ames qualify, the city of Ames?
No.
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 They
outside.
Yeah,
they chose not to participate. We did have a lot of communication back and forth, and you know, at this point in time, it wasn't going to work for both agencies. So, yeah, maybe in the future.
And do you normally, on the outside of the houses, do you normally just cover over the siding?
Typically, you know, we see a mix. Sometimes if we can side a project, we're going to side it. And kind of as, you know, you had your example where it's documented lead paint, you know, our contracts, a lot of times we use caution tape that says caution lead paint hazard.
Just put new siding over
it. We do scrape and paint, especially on historical projects, when we have to do, we do have to get the State Historical Preservation Office review. And so if we have to abide by certain standards of design, we may have to scrape and paint. That puts a little bit more onus on the property owner because they have to monitor. You know, they still have to make sure that that environment is keeping clean. So if we can, we try to side. The bulk of our project is window replacement because that's usually our biggest culprit of lead paint is the windows. The dust settles, kids play at that window trough. That's how they get it in their system.
But what do they do on the inside then, like the walls or lead paint on the walls? Do they have to take that all off or do you cover over it?
No, we do not do a full lead abatement to remove all lead from the site. So if a wall is intact and it's not deteriorated, chipping, peeling, cracked, you know, then we would leave it. It's okay to have lead paint in the home as long as it's intact and not deteriorated. If we had a hole, you know, got a big hole in it and it's chipping and peeling, or there's a door that constantly bangs against it, you know, we can look at, can we patch it? Can we paint stabilize it? Things like that.
One of the other things that goes along with the lead program also is each homeowner is eligible for $3,000 worth of Healthy Homes items that's not wrapped into that three-year forgivable lien. And so we go in and we're going to be looking at insulation with this grant, which is something we haven't did before, taking radon tests. Mm-hmm. We'll be looking at a lot of electrical, water heater issues, gutters, roofs, those types of things.
Well, I'm excited about the prospect. I mean, we, you know, it was, what, a year ago maybe? Not quite.
Yeah, when we applied about that. Yeah.
And little if any interest, but from cities outside of, you know, I think maybe the clerk from Roland was that meeting.
Roland is participating, and we're hoping we're going to have an application maybe come in. We'll see.
In.
So is it in?
And
oh, we have one.
Of EBL.
And then, Margie, you said one of your lead houses is in Cambridge, correct?
One, but you know, that's down to like one window.
Hey, we'll take it.
Absolutely.
And then there was one out.
Those averages have to pan out, so you need the small projects, too.
And you had a farmhouse, too, didn't you?
Yeah.
That was going to be demolished, I think.
Oh, okay. We don't want to do anything on that one, then. But, no, I appreciate the opportunity. It's I think it's a good opportunity, and then maybe in 3 years' time,
we hope
other
to,
communities will get started.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, anytime you do have questions about progress or how things are going, by all means, you know, we're happy to relay that information on or come back if we're available to give you updates.
Was there some paperwork? Cause
there is some paperwork.
I don't remember ever receiving anything.
Apparently it's with the county attorney.
Oh.
So we're working on that. Joyce stopped in the office there, and I think that the message is getting... getting returned.
Can I just ask? This seems like a great program, and it doesn't seem like there's any downside to it that I can tell.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't a town like Ames say okay? I mean, really, I'm more curious than anything.
I think, you know, the hesitation that we see from communities across the board is maybe they've in some cases had a bad experience with a federal program. FEMA is one of the top ones that we sometimes hear about. Ooh, I don't want to go, you know, because they're just hesitant. You know, we even have applicants who say, this is too good to be true. You know, so there's that fear of, you know, what's really going on here. And then, you know, I think sometimes people want to see proven results in Marshall County and Tama County. We had a lot of communities that participated, some that didn't. You know, we had people applying, and we had to turn them down and say, you know what, we can't. Go talk to your council. And so then those communities this time around have signed on and said, well, I don't know what we were thinking. And so, you know, it does just take some talking to. Unfortunately, in some cases, we see clerks tend to control what goes before councils, and so some of our councils don't even see the possibility to participate at all. And so we had one community where the council member was coming at our door saying, I want to participate. Why am I not seeing stuff? We're like, we're spending it. I promise. You know. The clerk wasn't passing it along. So, you know, thought maybe it would be more work for them or whatever it might be. But so it is a challenge that we face. With Ames, we had a lot of conversations back and forth. Our council, I think, reviewed it a lot. Joyce and I both worked for the city of Ames at one point, so we know the intricacies of Ames. and so, you know, I think that it just was maybe a little bit more than they were willing to take on right at this time and think about, and which, you know, is unfortunate, but maybe in the future they'll be able to join us.
Okay. Thank you both.
Thank
very
you.
Much. Discussion of flex benefits. I guess that's me. So just so the board is aware, and this affects our environmental health employees, the way Story County has handled their health care benefit for the last 25 years is we give each employee a set amount of money, and currently that amount is $575 a month. If the employee chooses to purchase health care, that's available through the county. We're currently with the in a group with the Iowa State Association of Counties, and it's a Wellmark. There's, I think, four different plans, I think, that they can purchase. So if they choose to spend that $575 towards health care, they can do that through the county. If they choose not to, they can pay the income tax on that, and that money shows up in their paycheck. So last October, a year ago, this past October, we had hired we didn't actually hire, but we've contracted the services of an insurance broker and a flex or a benefits attorney, because our benefits plan hadn't been reviewed in quite a while. So we did hire an attorney out of a law firm in Des Moines that specializes in benefits plans. And in October of 2013, there was some concern about what the changes in the Affordable Care Act would do to this type of a plan. She told us at that time that as of now, everything is okay. We did require the employees that weren't taking the insurance, if they were taking the benefit in cash, they had to provide some type of proof of insurance so that we knew that our employees were covered with insurance.
They took in cash. Okay.
Right. So it's either here or through a spouse, or, you know, you can go out on the open market and purchase it yourself. So we made that change. She told us at that point, she says, I think you're going to be good at least through July 1st of 2015. She says, but there are some more regulations that are going to be reviewed. And lo and behold, the IRS reviewed those regulations, and we found out about the first this year, late December, early January, that flex plan that we currently have was no longer going to satisfy the needs of the Affordable Care Act. So we have to stop giving the – we can't offer any type of a cash or a cash option. The federal government looks at that as like we're not putting anything towards the employee's health care. If they have the option to take that money in cash, then the federal government says, well, as far as we're concerned, you're not putting anything towards your employee's health care. So – right or wrong, that's the way they've interpreted it. So now what we're looking at doing is we had an hour's discussion today at our Tuesday board meeting about more than likely what will end up happening is there will be probably three different plans offered. The county will pay, depending on the level of the plan, probably at a minimum of 80% of a family or single policy. And then with that, we can still offer vision, dental, and I think it's mandatory short and long-term disability. We have to take that, and then you can buy life insurance if you'd like. So basically those are the changes that are coming. It affects all county employees, but for your folks' sake, it affects our employees. You know, and just to kind of put things in perspective, out of 300 and I don't know, 20, give or take, full-time employees. We have less than 60 people that purchase their insurance through the county. And two of those people purchase the family policy.
So most people don't purchase it?
No. Most people put, you can put some of that money into dependent care. So if you have, you know, daycare, you can put some of that in there pre-taxed and get reimbursed for your daycare. You can put it into a annuity, or you can pay the income tax and take the balance in your paycheck, which is most people do.
So what would you do if someone who is working for the county and their spouse has a really good insurance policy,
right?
And then they don't want it; they have another insurance policy,
right? Currently, right now,
they get money.
They get money.
But now, what would happen?
Now, if you decide you're going to stay on your wife's policy or your spouse's policy, you won't get that benefit.
You won't get that money.
Correct. And I don't assume that that's any different than it would be if, you know, if you're working for a company someplace, and if you elect not to take that company's health care because you get it somewhere else or your wife has it, I don't think most companies give you money instead of that.
Well, they don't charge you.
Right.
Most of us get charged somewhat.
Correct.
We were told they just have to pay the tax on it. They can still have, because we have the same thing, but my accountant said that they had to go back and pay the tax on all that money that I gave them.
Right.
Even though they used it for health care, they still had to pay the tax on it.
Yeah, see, we're, yeah, ours.
And
ours,
I have to pay the tax on it, too, now, too.
Yeah, see, so ours counts towards your IPRS, whether you take it in cash or not, and Matt, you were right, it does reflect on your, it counts towards your IPRS, but now that after July 1st, when that cash option is no longer available.
Regular income. And if you don't, it's a $100 a day fine, up to $36,000 penalty.
Mean word? Margaret.
One option that I came upon was IFU, and I put this in that survey that they did.
Right.
The IFU offers medical reimbursement for those who do not want to take insurance.
Right.
And so that would be like $2,300 a year, which would help that.
Right. I think that's one of the options that Alyssa's looking at.
Okay, good. I just was hoping that would turn loud and clear.
Yeah.
It's just like the dependent care. You can put money in for medical expenses. So if I get glasses, whatever the insurance doesn't cover, I pull that out. It's tax.
Right. That's what we do. If we get.
And it used to be, though, you would lose whatever you put in each year, but now they've.
You preload it with so much money.
Whatever company they're using now, you can roll over.
Yep.
550. I can't remember. So that's a new change. But it used to be you had to use it, so you'd be real careful what you put in. Otherwise, you lost that money completely. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. So.
You made the print.
Right. I think that's one of the options that they're.
You know, right?
So. Okay. Next is the final approval of the FY16 budget.
Not a lot of changes. They nickeled and dimed us on a few line items, 50, 100 here and there, okay? The big one I want to talk about is that we were turned down for that 0.75 salary increase, and I'll let Paul talk about that.
It's like I've said in the past, the Board of Supervisors, their objective or their overall plan is to treat all county employees the same. We told the same thing when the conservation director was in, and you know, I'll tell you guys the same thing. The plan is for a 2.25% pay increase across the board for all county employees. That's what the collective bargaining units have agreed to. They're in the first year of a three-year contract with a 2.25%, 2.5%, and 2.75% increase over those 3 years. So it would be probably safe to assume that next year's proposed increase for county employees will be a 2.5% increase. I know we've had discussions about merit pay, and we're not at that point yet. I did talk to our HR director about it. It's either Friday or yesterday, and she honestly believes that by January of next year that we could have a merit pay plan in place. So that's but I guess that's where we're at with salaries.
This would be for all county employees, regardless of what elected official they work for.
Correct. So, and the other, I can't remember the thing that you talked to Rick about, the, help me out, the, you know, the it's part of your, you guys go out in the field to do your drawings. What am I talking about? With that, and did we take that out of your proposed budget and we're going to get it this year, or was it in, I can't remember.
We had readjusted 2015, so this year's budget, to include buying that.
Right. Okay.
So it's just a readjustment.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're going to get that then.
One thing that's not on the agenda is this table.
That's that.
You know what? I emailed it out to be prepared to discuss it, and I was thinking it was going to be part of your report then.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
But we can, if it's okay with the chair.
I got your email.
We can do that. Is that okay, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, we won't be able to take any, you know, we won't, it's not necessarily an action item anyway. But
yeah.
Discussion, I think.
But we can discuss it.
Planning thing.
But, you know, if I just felt like this really wasn't my place to just take put my wish list on here. I think I would certainly welcome any ideas from the five of you, and I will include that on the sheet when we submit it, if you have any ideas. The two things that kind of stick out in my mind is the fact that there are about 15 to 20% of the rural houses countywide that don't have septic systems. In the more rural areas like East Indian Creek, it's more like 30%, but overall 15, 17 to 20%. And then also, you know, CAFOs has always been kind of a tough subject for our department. And if there was any ideas that you would have about water testing for those or ways to review the master matrix, that would be a good thing. Right now, DNR has us down for 57 animal feeding operations in the county. Just to kind of show you where we're at on that right now. Those are my two ideas. Just, you know, somehow pushing regulations or something to get more septic systems replaced. And then also, ag is a hard thing to touch, but try to get more water testing around these confinements. And if you have any other ideas, you know, now or even later, if you want to just email me, we have a little while before this meeting is.
You know, Margaret, I remember a long time ago that you, one of the first things you did was that you were sampling water throughout the county.
I was.
And that you were sampling water and you have all that data. Is there ever a thought of going back? Because I remember you said this, that you would maybe go back at some point and see if things changed. Is that, like, feasible, possible? Is that, like, or is that, like, or is that too much?
I would love to do that, and
because you did do that.
No, I thank you for remembering that. I appreciate it. When we were doing our scanning project, I specifically asked one of our individuals to scan that information in, and instead it was tossed. And all that data was lost, and it just took me a long time to get over that. And there's not a lot you can do about that, no, is there?
That's the nature of the beast, yeah.
So I apologize for that. That's, you know, that is my fault that data got lost, and no one is more sorry about it than I, because I put a ton of work in on that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So these systems that you say there's like 30% that systems
in that one watershed, but more like 15 to 20.
So unless somebody complains about it, there's nothing that...
Or time of transfer. Sometimes we'll catch them.
Until that point. So yeah. They just hang out there then.
Yeah. But, you know, like several states require the tank be pumped every 3 years. And when you start doing that, then it becomes obvious who needs new systems. You know, legislation as simple as that, or a statute as simple as that, wouldn't catch them all, but it sure would catch a lot. We don't want to catch them all at once because we don't have the staff to do them all at once, you know. So some kind of way to just start changing that percentage and getting it lower would be cool.
Well, even a change in the rules for the time of transfer. I mean, if it's a bank foreclosure,
mm-hmm.
or if you sell it to a family member, you don't have to have your system
inspected. Paul, we try to turn a blind eye to those exemptions, and legal counsel us that no, we could not. We had to follow everything in all the regulations that we do have to be as strict or more strict than what's put down there. Except for that, we cannot be more strict. It's specifically stated. So that is kind of off the table.
What did you say about the pumping the tank every 3 years? What mm-hmm. was that about?
Some states require that if you have a septic system, you have to somehow prove, I don't know how the mechanics work, but prove that you're pumping your tank every 3 years. 5 years would probably be a better frequency. But
That doesn't get to the ones that don't have a tank.
Don't have one anyway.
That wasn't too well.
Get your pipes pumped or whatever.
You know, the thing is, you know, going back to that water sampling, I wonder if there would be a way that you could, you know, and not as extensive as what you did before, but maybe have like 5 spots in the county that you sample, and then sample it every 5 years. Wouldn't that be a great bit of data 30 years down the line to see whether or not all the stuff you're doing is making a change?
Yeah.
And you see where things are now, and then in 5 years, our nitrates are down in our 5 places that were, mm-hmm. you know, our water, you know, our.
Mm-hmm. Well, the state does, yeah.
So when again, right?
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, but not surface water, Matt.
Oh, surface water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
well,
I'm
both
about.
Well and surface is what this project did. Yeah, yeah.
Because that's what I, as a citizen, would be very interested in seeing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like if we get a whole bunch of hog confinements come into this county, and then on the next survey, these areas are, it would give you certainly fodder to say,
yeah.
Or it could make us say, look, this is what we're doing, and this is how well it's improving, or, boy, we're doing all this, it's not making much of a difference.
One thing that through the
and one should not be Lake Laverne.
Yeah, we're going to put a water monitoring device, and I think it's where the east and the west, or the east and the Indian Creeks come together, which would be in that watershed that you showed for Hickory
mm-hmm.
Grove.
Mm-hmm.
A water monitoring device?
Right. There's never been any data on either one of those creeks. And so...
What will be tested, though?
Well, it's you know, it's part of this grant, and that's that Prairie Rivers RC&D has applied for to try to get a water shed coordinator hired.
Hmm.
And that was one of the in-kinds that, you know, somebody had to provide some in-kind and through the conservation's request for their budget that did include a, I think, one water monitoring device for East Indian Creek. And Mike thought probably the East, where the East and the Indian come together.
Hmm.
So it'll be interesting to see what's in there.
Yeah, and it would be. And also it'll be interesting to see over time.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of what you're going to want to look at.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a thought. I mean, as long as you're talking about strategic planning.
Okay, the last thing today is discussion of the septic information system, and that's Matt Corey.
I think on that budget, don't you have to vote on it again or not?
We have to approve that.
Yeah, we should probably take a motion and a vote to approve the changes made in the FY16 proposed budget.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve the amended proposed budget for fiscal year 16. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Okay. Now, Matt Corey.
I'm in.
Oh, I think. Dr. Kruby.
This is something that I threw together. We have the septic pumpers in Story County or around here. When they do a time of transfer, they'll call our office to see if we have diagrams and information on the systems and everything. And some of them, some of the smaller ones, like Earl Sanitation out of Zering, will actually pump systems on a Saturday, you know, when we're not around. And sometimes, you know, if he doesn't know where the system is, he could be out there on a Saturday for 3 hours poking around trying to find where the tank is or whatever, you know, because we're not in the office to pull up a diagram form or whatever. And this is something that's accessible online, and it's, I've already signed into it. It does ask for a password and everything, so it's password protected. Unless you have a password, you can't see anything that's like here. And my thought is each pumper would have their own individual sign in so that we know who's signed in. When they access an address, it does send an email saying that this user has accessed this property. So, like, for time of transfers, we kind of have an indication, like, when they call in and ask for a diagram, we can look and see if the property has a well, and then that way we know what we need to get the owner an application for a well time of transfer inspection so that we can get that done instead of all of a sudden we just have a time of transfer inspection and the property closed 3 days ago and now we got to find, you know, try to get that well inspection done. So this kind of, it'll give us a heads up, and I can show you here. This is one. You could do search by the address or by the parcel number. Most of the pumpers aren't going to know the parcel number, so you get the address, and then it comes up. Sometimes the address has different pins associated with it, like if it's a farmhouse here and then their bin site, sometimes the bin site's on a different property, but it has the same address as the house. So you can click that, and then it brings up the septic permit number and all that. And then you can just click the diagram, and then it brings up the diagram. And as my pocket just vibrates, I've already got the email that says that on February 3rd, 2015, at 323 Story County, access the parcel number that I just accessed. So it shows that email. And then they're able to, they can even stay out in the backyard at this house and pull it up on their cell phone, you know, on their smartphone, and have all that information at their hand. If they don't know the exact address, they could also, at the front page, they can click the map. And that's the septic systems that we have. It's not quite all of them. We're still missing some. Some are old systems that before we had parcel numbers that, you know, it's a rural route one in a name, and it's like, where is that? So if we zoom in, we can click on one of these, and then it brings up permit number 10. So, you know, this is a...
look for his burn pile.
And this one... We have the septic number 10, but we don't have any documents. Not everything. Everything is scanned, but not everything is... Basically, everything... All of our documents are attached to the parcels, but not everything is designated. Like, we have a bunch of documents attached to the parcel, but not everything is designated as this is septic, this is well. So it's not pulling up anything for that one. And it tells you here. And then... If there's nothing found, all they have to do is click this email, this link down here, and it'll send me an email saying that we're looking for information right here. Oh, nope, not that one. There we go. Come on. And this shows it requested further information, and it'll be like the user of... if John Gray clicked the link, it'd say John Gray requested, so we know who. And I'm going to make it further so that it sends the address. All we have to do is click reply, and we can send it so that we don't have to look up the address or anything, whatever. But this is something that I guess I've had John Gray kind of guinea pig it for me, and he's not tech savvy, so, and he's able to. it's simple enough for him. I mean, he uses Beacon. I mean, if you can use Beacon, you can, you know, the county's parcel website. So I guess this is something that I guess we need a blessing to make available to. It'd be the contract. The pumpers would have to request access to the website so that they could get a username and password and all that. It's not. We don't want all these documents available. Just some of the older documents, you know. Well, some of them, like our applications and stuff, has their emails and phone numbers. You know, we don't want those just that anybody can see. So it's something that it would have to be requested access for. And
yeah. Have you talked to Jessica about this at all?
No.
If you would just have a conversation with her,
mm-hmm.
and either include Barbara from IT or a separate conversation with her, and then it's not actually listed as an action item on here, but if you would do that before the next meeting,
mm-hmm.
and then really all it is, at that point it can just, you know, we could even put it on our consent agenda if we didn't want to have any more discussion on it, and if we did, we could pull it for more discussion. But just run it through her first,
mm-hmm.
and then talk to Barb about it and see if she's got any concerns, and then I think it's a good idea.
Because we already have, I have this stuff served on a website already, so that when we're out in the field, we can look up
right.
the stuff too. We're able to get it through the iPad or whatever.
You guys are here from 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, and I wouldn't think it would be uncommon for a pumper to be out, you know, if he's working at, when the weather's nice, if he's out at 6 o'clock at night or 7 yep. o'clock at
or
night in the summer.
Or have somebody call and their basement's flooded.
You know, my basement's full of crap, can you come help me out on a Sunday afternoon? You know, most of those guys, yeah. So, been there, done that.
And there
yeah.
has been a time or two that John has called me, you know, like on the weekend where he's had something that's gone wrong, and he knows that I am able to pull up the stuff
sure.
that I've emailed it to him before on a weekend when he's had trouble with sure. something. And
I think it's a good service to offer to these guys.
I think it's really nice.
So, yeah, I think you did a nice job on it, Matt. So.
And I can testify it works because I had it transferred to my house.
Yeah.
Mark, you put that system in 33 years ago, and he had the diagram, and we were probing. I knew where the tank was. I didn't know where the distribution box was, and he called it up on his phone. And
it was right there.
It was right there.
Yeah.
That's
we didn't
good.
Have to dig up my whole front yard, an acre and a half where we thought that was.
Okay. Very nice. Good work, Matt. That's very impressive. Any staff comments at this point? Or board comments? I would take a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Got a motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.